Brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Prep Radio on time, on target, as advertised, I should say, on the last podcast. We are going to have Clint Emerson back on, which has been a while. I love having Clint on, and he's always working on different things. I definitely want to try to get him on a full tear about Saudi Arabia, because he's been pretty vocal about that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, Clint did a lot throughout his life, so...
I'm going to say it to him, but, you know, he's a guy who transitioned not only very well and successfully, but, like, very quickly. I'll probably mention it during the interview. I mean, my first time meeting him, he was still serving. And just a few years after that, like, he's got a clothing line. He's got a whole series with 100 Deadly Skills now with, like, activity books, various editions, this 2019 desk calendar. And he's also got his security company, Escape the Wolf. So he's just like a guy who's doing all different interesting things.
Well, yeah, I think Clint was smart about it. I mean, we can talk to him about it, but I think he was very smart about it in that he started thinking about all of it before he got out of the military and started creating his business, his security business and everything. So it was all kind of like lined up. We'll have to talk to him about it. But I think there's like an actual clear thought process behind it. It wasn't something he just kind of like woke up one morning and was like, oh, yeah, I guess I'll do this. You know,
it had to have been well thought out.
Yeah.
I don't know if we mentioned it on his last interview with him, or if I don't even know if you were here for that one. It's just been a while, but did you see that there's like all these Chinese knockoff books of 100 Deadly Skills on Amazon?
No, but I mean, there's Chinese knockoffs of fucking everything, including fighter jets. So.
There's a lot of these, though, like these books, and they're called like 100 Lethal Skills or something. And like they steal his illustrations, and they're like all over Amazon. But I think he reported all of them.
Yeah, a lot of that is on eBay also.
Yeah. So we'll get into that with him, hopefully. But before we do, you were telling me this recent news, which I did see on Twitter and various other places, IED blast in Afghanistan, 2 Army members and 1 Air Force.
Yeah,
staff.
It was 2 Special Forces soldiers, a captain and a sergeant first class were killed, and a Air Force combat controller was also killed. I believe a contractor was wounded, and then I was told there's 2 other conventional Army soldiers and another Green Beret who are pretty grievously wounded. The IED apparently was so big that eyewitnesses said they saw the MRAP. So the MRAP is a mine resistant ambush protected armored vehicle.
Yeah.
Thing weighs like up to 28 tons, I think. And the blast was so big, it picked up this vehicle and threw it about 50 meters.
Jeez.
So, yeah, I mean, I wish I had something, you know, insightful or meaningful to say about all of that. But, you know, we got more soldiers dead in Afghanistan. I'm sorry to hear it.
Yeah. And from what you're saying with the MRAPs, it's not like it was an equipment issue, because there's always those times where our armored vehicles are not up to par.
No, I don't think. I mean, the Army, I'm sure, will do, you know, their after action review and assessments and all that. But it probably wasn't an equipment issue. What happens is that, you know, the enemy starts using IEDs. So we start putting armor on our vehicles or driving different vehicles that are armored like MRAPs. And so the enemy builds the IEDs bigger and bigger. When I was in Iraq the last time, they were actually taking like semi trucks full of explosives, like homemade explosives, and driving up to American vehicles and detonating. They detonated one at the base in Mosul. I wasn't at the base at that time, but it went off toward near the gate, and a friend of mine was like maybe a good mile away at the range setting things up. The blast actually knocked him down.
Wow.
it was so powerful.
That can be included in your book, that those type of stories.
There's a bunch of weird, I read through the, I mean, that's a whole nother subject.
Yeah. I'm curious.
I read through the first pass of the manuscript, and there's a lot of weird stories in there.
Sure. But yeah, terrible news to hear. It's gotten to the point where it's like repetitive news because there's no change in strategy.
Yeah, I think it's like 13 KIAs this year in Afghanistan. Not to sound callous about it, but you know, soldiers die in war.
Of course.
And I think we can accept that when it's in pursuit of a strategic goal, when it's in pursuit of national security. I think every soldier, certainly every special forces soldier, combat controller that signs up, understands that they may have to give their life for their country. I just think that our country, our government, America, owes it to our soldiers who are putting their lives on the line to have some sort of coherent strategy for them, to put them on a path to pursue something. If we're just over there driving around until you get blown up, then it's time to get these guys home, get them the hell out of there.
Yeah. All right. Before we get to Quint Emerson, I might as well mention you guys now what we have going on with Hurricane Group. I was checking out all the new stuff we have with Crate Club. If you check out the Instagram, you'll see all the gear that, not all of it, you know, a lot of it's a surprise, but some of the gear that the guys are preparing. And 2019 is going to be very interesting for Crate Club. I saw Brandon, of course, the CEO today, and he was talking about, and I would agree, if you need to give a present to any guy in your life, Crate Club is the way to go at crateclub.us. The guys
or
are working.
Girl.
Yeah. I know their whole, the whole model right now, though, is it's a club for men by men. But there are women who like gear. I agree with you.
I get like all four of the crates or whatever. I get them sent to my house by the company. And so I end up with a lot of gear, and a lot of it is stuff that, like, so if you get the basic crate, it has some stuff in it, but then if you get the premium crate, it's like you're getting the basic set, but then all the other stuff.
Sure.
So I end up with more than one item.
I've had that before.
So what I typically, like, give that stuff away when whether guys or girls come to visit my wife and I at our apartment, it's like a party favor. It's like, oh, you want a folding knife? Here you go. Flashlight. I give a lot of those things to my stepfather, too, who works outdoors a lot, and he loves it, flashlights and everything else.
I'm trying to think of, it was the Taurus knife that I gave to my friend George, and my friend who lives in Arizona, he was actually texting me. He was like, you have any new knives from Crate Club? Because he was like, I use that thing all the time. You know, but is Taurus still in business, though? Because I was actually randomly checking this out, and I haven't seen anything new. So
the pistol company?
Well, they were doing knives, and I haven't seen anything new, so.
I haven't heard anything about them going out of business.
I don't know. I was curious because a lot of people did like that knife. But we've had some others in the premium. I think we did a Spyderco knife in like 2017 or maybe earlier this year. But anyway, all of that stuff at crateclub.us. That's crateclub.us. If you're a dog owner, we have our partnership with Kuna, who is a team of trained canine handlers picking out a box for your dog each month of healthy treats and training aids. It's custom built for your dog's size and age as well. The products are U.S. sourced, all natural, and they not only promote a healthy diet, but also promote being active with your dog. So no matter what type of dog it is, you could order a box from us, and that's at kuna.dog. That's kuna.dog, C-U-N-A.D-O-G. And also, of course, we have the Spec Ops channel. If you haven't checked out Training Cell, it follows former Special Operations Forces as they participate in the most advanced training in the country. Everything from shooting schools, defensive driving, jungle and winter warfare, climbing, and much more. And you can check that all out at specopschannel.com. That's specopschannel.com. And take advantage of a limited time offer of 50% off your membership. Only $4.99 a month. And you could also check out the app for that in the App Store, whether you have an iPhone or Android. With that, we're going to get over to Clint Emerson.
What's up, buddy?
Clint, what's going on, man?
Not much. How you doing?
Doing good. I'm here with Jack, so whole team is here.
Hey, Clint. Hey, Jack. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Great.
Thanks for being flexible.
No, it's all good, man. Not a problem. Actually, since, you know, we're recording right away, are you able to publicly acknowledge who you met with or no?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so what was up with that? I was curious myself.
So I've been working with the International Spy Museum in D.C. for several years now, and every year we host a dinner that honors, you know, someone who's played a big role in intelligence and also special operations. So it's called the Webster Award, and Webster was a judge. He was the director of the CIA, and he was director of the FBI. He's the only guy to carry all that weight in one lifetime, and so the award is named after him. So last year it was George W. Bush, and then this year, which was last night, was Bill McCraven. So it was it's a really cool event. I highly recommend you guys go if you ever have the opportunity. It's always around this time every year. And it's a great dinner. It's probably the biggest security vulnerability in the world, because you have, I mean, every single director of every intelligence agency sitting in one room, you know. So, but other than that, it's a great endeavor, and that's kind of they had me fly up and help out, and then I just got back, and that's why the flights were all screwy, and overlapped with our original interview time. So sorry about that.
No, it's all good, man. I was just curious. I was like, oh, what is Clint doing with Admiral McCraven? That's pretty cool. But getting into everything, I feel like most of our audience knows you by now, but I should give the formal introduction. Clint's a former SEAL, served in several SEAL teams, author of 100 Deadly Skills. But the project is the 100 Deadly Skills Puzzle and Activity Book, which I was just checking out. It's designed to improve the brain's cognitive function, memory, anxiety levels, and also serve as therapy for TBI and PTSD. We'll get into everything else you do, because Clint has several companies: Escape the Wolf, which is his crisis management company, and his brand Violent Nomad, which I love. I've, you know, ordered a Violent Nomad shirt, which I wear all the time. but I guess the first thing we'll get into is what inspired this puzzle and activity book. It's cool, and it's definitely something different than, you know, the books, but it's in that same realm of 100 Deadly Skills.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the books are really, I mean, first, macro to micro, right? So with Escape the Wolf, the crisis management stuff, you know, I was given all these great, you know, best practices and custom education programs on what to do when there's an active shooter, natural disaster, medical events, you know, even cyber and travel abroad. And then I was trying to figure out, well, how do you get that to the consumers that don't necessarily work for companies that are willing to pay for, you know, custom tailored stuff that I provide? And then that's where 100 Deadly Skills came from. And then once I built those and got them out, and, you know, they still have been doing really well, that to give people skills that they could use, whether it's bad guys or, you know, natural disaster or any other kind of crisis that they could face. Then I was like, well, wait a minute. Now how do I get, you know, people to be a little more aware, other than just talking about awareness or coming up with stupid color codes or some other shit that you see out there? You know, it's great if you're going to be in yellow, orange, red, whatever state all the time. But the reality is unless you train your brain, then you'll never really be doing yourself any good. Just because you learn some color codes doesn't necessarily mean you're actually paying attention. So, so I wanted to put together another book that kind of gave people additional ability. And it's they're tough, but that's the point. It's supposed to the puzzles. I've worked with a puzzler. Believe it or not, there's not too many of them left. Human puzzlers, because a lot of your puzzle books these days are computer generated. All of my puzzles are human generated, and there's a big difference between the two. And some of them are original puzzles that we develop, and they force you to use parts of your brain you probably haven't used since you were learning how to crawl. And that's kind of the problem with, as you grow up, you know, when you're a kid, you're tapping into so many parts of your brain to learn everything that you're learning so quickly, you know, whether it's walking, talking, all of that stuff. We're like totally, you know, pulling every string in the brain to learn it. And then as you learn things or you stop learning as much, then certain parts of the brain start going dormant or don't get tasked as much. And so, you know, you don't, you lose a little bit of that capability, or you don't gain as much as you thought you could. So we put puzzles together that tap into parts of the brain that probably haven't been touched in a little while. And by doing so, it'll help with your memory, your cognitive stuff. So retention, attention. And then of course, when you relate all this to a guy that, you know, has been in combat, when I went through NICO, and if you know, people don't know what NICO is, you gotta have certain symptoms, and then, you know, you get admitted basically to Walter Reed for 30 days. And now they've got, I think, they've got a couple of them now around the country, and it's for PTSD and TBI and all that. And so, that's where I learned, when you're not talking to shrinks, doing group therapy, individual therapy, you know, banging on bongos, painting pictures, whatever, they have you do all kinds of stuff to figure out what works for you to reduce anxiety and help with your, issues you've had from multiple concussions. When you're not doing all that, you're sitting in class and, sitting in class and learning about, you know, how the brain works. And I found it fascinating. So, later on, obviously now, later, years later, when I started thinking about the puzzle book, I kind of tapped into all that old education and some of the people that I talked to back then, and now you've got a puzzle activity book. At first, I was like, it sounds kind of cheesy and corny, but the reality is, you know, if people would just train their brain more often, it actually benefits you physically, emotionally. I mean, there's so many different ways it benefits you, because people forget that brain is the control center for everything we do. And, but yet we do nothing for it except,
read a book, maybe,
but stay up late at night or too much coffee or whatever else, but that's about it.
I'm looking at it now. Actually, I can see this being like a, rather unconventional Christmas gift.
Yeah, no, I mean, heck yeah. That thing, it's got a little bit of everything in it. And, yeah. Like I said, it's given the ability, but reducing anxiety. So sometimes certain puzzles aren't exactly going to reduce your anxiety. So, but the coloring, you know, it's crazy. Art, all the arts actually have been used in different forms of therapy with guys with PTSD. You know, actually painting masks, was one of the big things you do at NICO. But being creative, putting something together, but something as simple as coloring actually can take your anxiety levels and drop them to zero. And, you know, you're stressing out.
I was actually talking about this on a podcast one time about how I got back into painting models and how I found it to be very therapeutic, in the sense that, like, you're just completely concentrated on something, doing something that's sort of creative, and it just allows you to focus on one thing, as opposed to, you know, how we're normally just distracted with 100 different things, especially with all the, you know, devices and smartphones and tablets and every other damn thing we have nowadays.
Yeah, that's it. You nailed it. It's making you sit down and disconnect. And when you start doing something that's creative and it has a start and an ending, you know, mm-hmm. when you look at a blank piece of paper that has, you know, a black outline of whatever, and, you know, you got to color it in, that start and knowing that there's a finish, and as you get going, just almost takes everything and puts it aside. And then once you're done, you've got a, you know, a sense of accomplishment. You've finished something, or you started, you finished it. During the whole process, your respirations will drop, your pulse will drop, your blood pressure will go to normal. It's kind of interesting. They had us hooked. I mean, the only way I know this is because they would put all these monitors on us and make us do different things. And
And in the 30 days, you find out what really works for you and what doesn't. So I tried to build the book with a lot of the things I thought that would work for the average person, along with the TBI PTSD kind of guy as well, or gal.
Do you expect anyone in China to bootleg this, like the 100 Deadly Skills book?
Oh, I'm sure.
That was crazy for a while because it was like a ton of them popping up. I was saying during the intro, I don't remember if we talked about it before on the podcast, but like it was a problem for a while.
It was, yeah. I mean, and here's the thing about, you guys probably know this, but Amazon doesn't, you know, they don't regulate at all. So you could type in at one point 100 Deadly Skills and you'd have, you know, 15 fraudulent books sitting there with it.
Well,
they had the same title and everything, but
they rely on us, the consumers or authors, reporting it. Like I had a guy just blatantly steal the cover of one of my novels and then slap his own title on it. And from what I understood, the contents of the book was a screenplay he stole from somebody else and started selling it on Amazon. Yeah. So they rely on, you know, us, you know, so if you're a Clint Emerson reader, and you see that kind of BS on Amazon, go ahead and report it to the company, because that's really the only way that stuff gets taken down.
Yeah, no, it eventually did. I hit up Amazon and they put me in touch with a department dedicated to that. And it took a little bit of time, but eventually a lot of the frauds kind of fell off. But there's still a couple on there. It's crazy.
So I got to ask you,
like, whatever.
I got to get your take on something completely different than this. And I know you've been very vocal about it on Instagram and everything. And you've spoken about on the show, growing up with your dad working in the oil industry in Saudi Arabia and, you know, being disgusted by the culture, which, as you said, inspired you in a lot of ways to become a SEAL. Just what's your take on what's currently going on in Saudi Arabia, as well as Trump's pretty blunt response that, like, we're not going to do anything about this, about journalists being killed under mysterious circumstances and that type of thing?
Yeah, I mean, my thoughts on Saudi will never change. I mean, they, you know, as mentioned before, growing up there, you see a lot of what really goes on. And, you know, it's a closed country for a reason. There's no tourism. No one comes into that country unless you're basically on a work visa, and the work has to be, you know, something that benefits them. So, you know, my dad, you know, was an engineer, and Aramco is pretty much a Saudi company at this point. But it's run by Westerners, you know, Americans, Brits, and Canadians. And so, you know, growing up there, you're at the mercy of the culture and the religion and the religious police and everything that comes with it. And when it's their country. So, you know, later you realize, hey, that's their way of doing things. That's how they do it. Just don't let it come outside the fence line. But now, you know, they're getting a little more brave and doing stuff outside the fence line, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, these are people that, you know, we had grown men trying to, you know, beat the living shit out of us just because we were Westerners. I was 10 years old, you know, trying to escape, you know, the hands of, like, you know, 4 or 5, 20, 30-year-old men on a regular basis. And who knows what they would have actually done, because they're all perverts. You know, they run to Bahrain and, you know, where they think Allah can't see them, and they whore around and drink.
Allah cannot see across the bridge.
Yeah, they go across the causeway, hang out in Bahrain, do all their stupid shit, and they go back to Saudi because they literally believe Allah can't see them outside of Saudi. So, I mean, they're just hypocrites. They've always been hypocrites. They're probably the laziest people on the planet. I mean, I can't fucking stand them. So, you know, I've probably been labeled as prejudiced to all that to Saudis, but, you know, I don't do it based on anybody else's opinion other than my own experiences. And I think that's a little bit of the difference. As far as, you know, whacking a journalist, I mean, it just kind of shows how, one, they're still just as barbaric as they've ever been. But I think, two, they're not that good at anything. You know, they export oil. They don't export knowledge, or there's nothing that they're really good at. They buy a lot of, have you ever seen what they do when they do these $100 billion investments into their military?
I mean, they store it. They have, they've built these massive high-tech hangars, and they just fill it with inventory. And they don't have a body for every aircraft. They don't, you know, they don't have a pilot for every aircraft. They don't have a driver for every tank. They don't have that. They just buy this shit and then they just store it in something. It's like, what are you doing? You know, it's like, you don't, I don't get it. That, but that's just how they roll. They just spend money and
some kind of quid pro quo.
Their good graces. I mean, it's all political, of course, but at the end of the day, they just don't. That kill was, I mean, are you kidding me? You're the whatever, the secret squirrel assassins for the kingdom, and you couldn't target this guy and kill him and make it look like an accident. You know, it's not, I don't personally think it's that difficult to pull something off like that when it's a sponsored hit, you know. Instead, they lure him to their own embassy and do it there, which I think was just
idiotic.
It's just a cheap way. It's a cheap way of doing it. It's like they could have hired the best mercenaries on the planet. What do? They do it themselves and fuck it all up. I mean, it just goes to show just how stupid they are.
What was it like growing up in Saudi Arabia? Like, we hear these stories. I mean, I know you talked a little bit about it, but we hear these stories about like public executions, you know, women being beat in the street, things like this. I mean, what sort of things did you witness when you were there?
You know, if you were leaving, well, I grew up in Abqaiq. So if you're like, let's say if you were driving to Khobar is, you know, Khobar Towers, mm-hmm. and that attack was, you know, obviously, what was that, in the 80s or early 90s? But
90s, we had a guy on who was an EOD tech that responded.
Yep. It's just that was right after I left. I get them all mixed up because there was a lot of terrorism that goes on inside Saudi. And what most people don't know is that the people of Saudi Arabia can't stand the relationship that the royal family has with any outsiders. And so the royal family isn't necessarily liked by anyone, of course, because one, they kind of rule with that butcher mentality, but and it's always kind of been that way. And so the terrorism inside the kingdom is pretty active and alive and well. It was in the 80s when I was there as a kid, and definitely have heard about it, you know, during my military career. And so for us as kids, you know, there was times when there were terrorist attacks on those American compounds because it was just the people of Saudi Arabia's way of shunning the government, you know, but in their relationships with America. And so, you know, being Americans, and now you're going to go, and we go up to Khobar to go shopping, you know, it's a vibe you get. There is a hierarchy of who's important to who's not. And Americans and Canadians and Brits are down there with Filipinos and Pakistanis, which Filipinos and Pakistanis are really the slaves of Saudi Arabia. And then you've got the Americans and and the Brits and the Canadians just like right there in the same, you know, pool. So simple stuff, standing in line to go shopping, and, you know, Saudi men will go to the front of the line. No one's going to do anything about it. I mean, you could be in a, you know, let's say the line at the souk is 20 people long to check out. And, you know, if you're a Saudi citizen, then you get front of the line privileges, which means you're going to be standing there all day long because they never give you the opportunity to actually make it to the register. And I remember my dad, you know, he's a big old, you know, Texan, and he couldn't, I would see him almost boil over a couple of times. You could just see in his face, like he just wanted to, you know, go nuts inside that place. But if you did, you know, you're always wrong too. That's the other thing. It doesn't matter. Whatever happens, especially if it involves a Saudi citizen, you're always going to be wrong. And the consequences are unpredictable, you know. So you just had to like keep your shit squared away while you were there. And me as a kid running around causing trouble, you know, in the back of your mind, you're always thinking you cannot get caught doing whatever it is you're going to do because the fathers pay the consequence. And so when you talk about the public canings, you know, they have guys that are pros. That's their job, is to learn how to cane properly. And if you look at it, it's not like a cane that you think when you walk, you know, an old guy with a cane walking down the street. Their canes are like basically a very long bamboo shoot, you know, papyrus, right? And it's sectioned. And as it gets to the end, it gets more and more narrow, like a fishing pole. And so it has this whipping kind of flexibility capability to it. And so, you know, I watched a kid get pulled out of school and get three, you know, basically he was caned three times. And when they do it, they stop and they whip that thing. They stop at about, you know, whatever, 45 degree angle, and they let the flexibility come down the back and then whip back up. And when it comes down, it's kind of whipping you. But when it comes back up, it fillets your back right open. I mean, these things are, you know, they're built. You know, it's ultimate pain, right? Having your back filleted open by this this fishing pole-like whip. So, you know, you witness that. And that was just a kid who was, like, peeing his name on the, you know, he was my age, and he was, like, urinating his name onto a sidewalk, you know, like any other, you know, I don't know what kind of kids you hung out with. I hung out with kids that did that all the time, peed on everything. So, and that was the consequence for it. You know, they still, you know, if you're a thief, you'll see plenty of Saudis running around with, you know, their right hand missing. And the way they do it is basically, you know, it's guillotine style, right? You stick your wrist in there, they chop it off, and then immediately stick your stub into, like, it's like boiling oil to cauterize it and everything. So not only is there, it's not like their stubs after they get their hand cut off is nice and neat looking. It's like third degree burn melted looking, because of the process that they do it.
It sounds like, you know, what black people experienced in America before the Civil Rights Act. Like, you know, you've read in the books about, you know, just living in constant fear of, you know, law enforcement, but also of, like, lynchings and all sorts of, like, just sick shit that was done back in those days.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that was bad. I mean, this is a government doing it, and it's still doing it to this day. I mean, you know, I see the eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. I mean, I think we can all agree that certain crimes here in the United States, wouldn't it be great if, you know, we did some of this to certain bad guys for whatever crime they committed. I mean, I kind of see a little bit of their logic in it, but I mean, stealing something and doing it, you know, now if it's a rapist, if it's a murderer, sure, why not, you know, give them a little bit of, you know, something to remember for the rest of their life, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, for stealing something at the souk and you get your hand chopped off, I mean, that's obviously
caning a little kid.
Permanent. It's a little permanent, right?
Yeah. So,
we witnessed all kinds of stuff. I mean,
tied into that, though, with the actual journalist, I would actually just like to hear your take on Trump's statement, because the last episode, Jack, you were saying Trump basically saying we're not going to do anything. You were saying was like the most brutally honest thing you heard from a politician.
That's just like probably the most real thing we've ever heard from a president about our relationship with Saudi Arabia. That's like they can get away with anything.
Oil prices are low.
They can literally get away with murder.
I think we all know Trump. he's a unique president without a doubt. I think he definitely has more stupid shit coming out of his mouth than he does smart stuff from time to time. I mean, I don't know what runs through the guy's head.
Yeah.
For a long time, I was like Trump neutral. I was like, I'm not going one way or another with this dude. Let's just see what happens. And, you know, but God, it's like, you know, when it comes to Saudi, I think we give him a pass a lot.
Yeah.
And we do a lot for them, you know, behind the scenes. You know, it's and we as a government, it's not just Trump, but I mean, every president thinks that if we have Mecca on our side, that somehow that gives us credibility with the rest of the Muslim world. And I'm here to tell you, it actually poses the opposite thought process and threat over there. Like, it makes everyone actually more pissed off that there's these public meetings in the kingdom and this and that. But we continually think that if we're in the good grace of Riyadh and Mecca, that somehow that's going to give us leverage with other Muslim countries. And it just doesn't, other than a place to land our aircraft. That's it. I mean, it's we want our place to base out of from time to time. Great. Then that's what it should be. But every time we do something that's public, meeting with the king or the prince or this or that, it actually irritates, you know, Muslims in those regions, those areas, because it's like, once again, like I said at the beginning, no one likes the royal family's position or relationship with the Western world. So it doesn't actually help anything. And I think every president we've had, I'm wondering, like, okay, who advises on that piece of it, that, you know, cultural awareness? Because I don't know that they know that.
Well, the Saudis
me living there, I'm seeing it. It's like, okay, to me, it seems like common sense, but whatever.
Well, the Saudis also have a significant lobby here in the United States, down in D.C. and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? What's the name of the big fund?
I can't remember offhand.
Bob Baer's books are pretty good about dissecting, like, the politicians and Saudi money. There in D.C., the Carlyle Group. Is it Carlyle? I can't remember the name of it, but there's an actual big, like, finance firm that when he dissected it down, there's all these, you know, obviously influencers in the United States government that, you know, put portions of their, you know, investments into a certain financial group, but the financial group is all backed by Saudi money and Saudi control. And, it's like a ad hoc way of kind of buying in, if you will.
I'm just looking on Wikipedia now, and it lists, you know, and I know this isn't always the most reliable source, but it lists some of the lobbyist groups for the Saudi government in America. It says Hill and Knowlton, Corvis, Q-O-R-V-I-S, and then it has a list of some others, that the Akin Gump Strauss.
Middle East Policy Council.
Yeah.
Another important one.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't remember the name of the one, but he did. I mean, that book is awesome at breaking down just how, in you know, how much we have somehow...
The Podesta
in the
group.
Back pocket, you know, the back pocket of the Saudis. I don't know.
He's a brilliant guy. Strange, we had Bob Baer on the podcast quite a while ago.
Yeah, you should bring him back. Talk about it. He'll destroy him far better than I can.
And judging by some of your Instagram posts on the topic, you seem to be of the belief that, you know, we could be self-sufficient in energy. So I don't know if you'd like to get into that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I can only go by, you know, anything that's, you know, put out there. But, you know, here in Texas Monthly Magazine is something that I read pretty regularly, and I don't really read that much, but I read that one pretty regularly. And that's where I think you saw the post on that Texas is climbing, right? It's now if it was its own country, it'd be the fourth largest economy. And like and also happened to be number four is oil producer. And they're projecting that it'll be number two in the world by within a 2 or 3 years, if I remember the article right. So, in the post you see is just me. I love taking a swing anytime I can at the Saudis. I like to kind of make that point. But it's a more of a global point, too, that, you know, we really don't need them and haven't needed them for a while. There's plenty of oil on this planet. Remember how many ever years ago they thought we were running out? It's like it's Earth.
It doesn't
run out of oil.
They've been predicting the end of or what they call peak oil since about the time of the Civil War, actually, rather than the 1860s.
Yeah, it's like it's not. It's, I think people forget it's a naturally produced item by
the earth. It doesn't just stop making it. But, you know, can it be more difficult to find it from time to time? Sure. But there's plenty of oil on this planet, and we don't necessarily have to get it from the Arabian Peninsula, I think is just the big takeaway.
I guess the other thing I wanted to get into you with, Clint, is what me and Ian were talking about this a little bit before we gave you a call, and Ian was just commenting that, you know, you seem like you had a pretty successful transition from the Navy into the private sector. And I was speculating a little bit that, you know, I bet he had a pretty good plan and he started his business before he left the military, you know, had a deliberate idea in mind of how to progress forward. And I just wanted to ask you if you could talk a little bit about that, maybe impart some advice on other guys who are fixing to retire or get out of the military in the near future.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely had a plan. Escape the Wolf, the book, you know, I put that thing together while I was up at the NSA, because when I was looking around for, you know, how to be gray type classes and schools, and for not just for me, but for guys that I would teach when I wasn't deployed, there wasn't much, you know. So I ended up putting all this stuff together, and it ended up turning into a little, you know, book for professional travelers. And, you know, networking is still the key. You know, you hear that all the time. Always meet as many people as you can, stay in touch with them as often, you know. And that definitely holds true, because that little book, I'd pass it out, you know, for free basically to guys, and it circulated around in the government contracting world, and then it kind of made its way into the hands of the head of security for Dow Jones, you know, Wall Street Journal, an FBI agent that was their global security director. And he hit me up one day and said, "Hey, I got this little book called Escape the Wolf. I was wondering if you could turn this into like e-learning, and I want my 700 most elite journalists at the Wall Street Journal to, like, you know, learn this stuff." And it was in light of Danny Pearl.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Danny Pearl showed up to what he thought was a legit source meet, ended up kidnapped and having his head cut off on YouTube. So Wall Street Journal kind of was like, all right, we got to start taking security a little more serious. My e-learning is still there today, and they still take it. And that was years ago. So that was kind of the kickoff. So I was really fortunate in the fact that to have a book turn into a business. And then I started doing much, much bigger crisis management programs, you know, that includes everything now, everything from strategic communication to, you know, OSHA approved policy and procedure, along with workforce education. That's all video based. And then, you know, now I'm doing it for all kinds of Fortune 500 guys. But if it wasn't for networking, if it wasn't for that consistent grind and that push, and I mean, I think all of the rules of working hard apply. And certainly, you know, when you have a bad day, that's not the day to go, fuck this. You know, it's have a better reason than that. You know, it's, I think a lot of guys, they, if they're starting a business, especially from scratch, and if things just don't turn as quickly as they thought, then they give up. And that's why most of your small businesses fail within the first 3 years, because they expect, like, you know, everything to be, you know, in the black or profitable, you know, overnight. And it just doesn't work that way for anyone, regardless of what you see on social media, you know. And I think that's the other piece is, if you're watching all your buddies and it seems like they're just succeeding and it's so easy, take it from me, they're not. There's a lot of hard. It takes 2 seconds to post a picture and write a caption. Meanwhile, there's 24 fucking hours I'm working my ass off, you know. So it can appear that things are easy, but the reality is it's not. I don't think it's easy. It's been easy for anyone. I think you get lucky from time to time and you take advantage of that luck. And that luck is like a wave, right? It has a high point and then it has a trough. And
you will eventually be back in that trough again. And the goal is to, you know, get back up to the top of the wave as many times as you can, and then shorten your distance from wave top to wave top, and just keep on going. And I think that's all advice you hear all the time. But for guys transitioning, you know, what I did is I put in my retirement paperwork 24 months out, which is the earliest you can do it. So 2 years out. That way the military knows, okay, that guy isn't serious about us anymore. And they tend to put you in a job or put you in a place where, you know, that isn't that important, which is great, because then all of a sudden you get time to do what you need to do and concentrate on your business plan and everything that you plan on doing, and then leveraging any of the networks that you've created. And then you just go for it, you know? So I had people that, helped and promoted, and if you can land a maven, you know, land as many mavens as possible, you know, it's like, and for those that don't know what a maven is, it's someone who's got a network much larger and bigger than you that can broadcast for you. I think that the, you know, influencer has probably become a more popular term, but a maven is really someone that can mentor, but also has the network that can help you. And for me, it was, you know, an older guy. He's in his 70s now, but at the time, he knew everybody in government. He knew a lot of people in corporate. And so he kind of became the guy that I would, you know, bounce ideas off of and talk to. And he would feed me great advice, and make sure anybody who's feeding you advice from experience, you actually listen to it. Don't think yep. you somehow know more than they do. Just listen and take it all in, and then use it to the, you know, the best you can for whatever it is you're doing. And, but you know, hard work will yeah. never fail you.
The reason I say this, by the way, and I mentioned it in the intro, is just, and it makes sense that you were planning this out for years as you were retiring, because when I first met you, Clint, actually at Sirius XM, you were still active duty. And probably within, you know, 3 years of that, you'd not only have a successful book, you have a successful clothing line, your crisis management company. I mean, it's a lot of really big things going on. And at least to me, it seems like it was done relatively quickly. But based on what you're saying, the plan was years prior to that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's I think so. You create an ecosystem, and for me, I personally believe if your ecosystem stays in the same lane, if all parts somewhat stay in the same lane, and what I mean by that is, like, if you look at all of my stuff, it is in like this
security realm,
self-reliance and self-rescue is kind of the messaging. If I'm talking to a corporation, my job is to get all of their employees to be more self-reliant when something bad happens. Like, don't wait for help, help each other and solve the problem, right? And then 100 Deadly Skills is the consumer version of that. And then my brand is really saying that, right? The Violent Nomad is someone who can, you know, who embraces self-reliance and self-rescue and isn't waiting for someone to help them. And that's kind of so all of it, that whole ecosystem is kind of relying on one another for survivability. And then before you know it, it starts kind of growing on its own. And I think if you kind of outline what you want your ecosystem to be, and it's got three different categories of, you know, funding or money streams that come in, then when one is down, the other two are up, you know, you're still going to survive each day and you're going to pay your bills. You know, I certainly am not the kind of guy that puts all my eggs in one basket. So if I don't have, you know, let's say, you know, corporate contracts going on with Escape the Wolf, then at least I know I've got like 100 Deadly Skill Books or something that's still going. Or if 100 Deadly Skill Books aren't doing as good as I would like, then I've got a retail brand that is, you know, keeping things afloat. So all of it ebbs and flows, and it's just like the stock market, you just kind of create your own little stock market, right? And you always hope one is up while the other two are down. And but the goal is to keep all three of them, you know, up, alive and well and profitable all the time. And it's fun. I can't imagine working for anybody, you know. It's like,
that's some pretty good.
Me, the last 10 years of my life was, you know, basically working for myself in the military. And, you know, I got out and I was like, yeah, it's what America is built for, is capitalism and work for yourself, do it yourself. And before you know it, you're somewhat profitable.
It's like some good real talk right there. I feel like, Clint, you know, about making it in the private sector after you leave the military. I mean, regardless, there's a lot of hard work involved, but some good entrepreneurial advice in there also.
Yeah, I don't know. It's at the end of the day, so I was flying and all that. So I don't know if I'm making any fucking sense whatsoever.
No, that was like some good practical advice that news you can use.
Yeah, I fully agree. You know what I was going to tell you before we wrap up here is there's a lot of guys at the staff here at Hurricane Group who will really dig your stuff. Scott Whitner comes to mind. And I remember I once had a conversation with Scott about just like various fitness regimens and stuff. And I remember Scott saying to me, I just do what I learned from Clint Emerson, which I think is, hopefully I'm getting this right, because to be honest, I'm not the one who's read it, but he was telling me all about it, is run, fight, run, right? Is that your whole regimen that you have?
Yeah. I truly believe human performance. Once again, man, I am not articulating myself very well right now.
I think you are. You sound great. Days.
But so I apologize.
No, you sound good.
And fuck, and I don't.
You're just being critical of yourself, but you sound great, man.
So, the beginning of each book, 100 Deadly Skills, is the Violent Nomad Workout. And in order for anyone to be self-rescue, self-reliant oriented, you've got to take human performance seriously. And human performance is it's mental, it's physical, but I'm more on the physical side. You've got to be able to, you got to be in shape in order to take care of yourself in a bad situation. But ideally, you're in good enough shape, not just to take care of yourself, but others. So the workout it's still a HIIT workout, right? It's still a high intensity interval training, but it's not CrossFit. And the reason being is because it's very distinct in the four things that you want to put into every workout. And run, fight, run is an example of it, where you're always going to incorporate sprints. You're always going to incorporate a push exercise, a pull exercise, and then a rotation. And you're not breaking down, and you're doing big macro muscle movements. I'm not the kind of guy who wants to sit, you know, I think the beauty of CrossFit is you get in, you get out, yep, and you get results. The same with the Violent Nomad workout. You're going to do it and you're going to get results. And none of it is built to look good in front of the mirror. It's all about being functionally capable to do more for yourself and others. And so the ones that are in the book have a heavy bag as the weight that you would use. And you can buy heavy bags in all different weights. And that's what makes it kind of nice. That's what makes it nice. And you can do it outside. I truly believe in working out outside. That's the other piece that's different, is the elements will burn more calories than the workout itself sometimes, if it's when it's really, really hot or when it's really, really cold. So you're getting like double, triple the burn just by working in that atmosphere. And anybody who's been in the military knows that. I mean, you go out on an op and it's, let's say, 72 hours. You come back way lighter than you did when you started. Granted, some of that is dehydration, but most of it is truly you're just burning constantly. So embrace the elements is number one. Number two, put the pull, push, rotation, and the sprint all together. Sequentially, and it doesn't matter what order, but you're going to do your push. Your push could be bench press, and you're going to do it to max. Put on whether it's your body weight or less, and you go for reps until it hurts, until you can't do any more. Then you're going to get off that bench, and you're going to go do a pull. The pull could be pull-ups for the day, and you change these up, right? And now you're going to do as many pull-ups as you can, and as soon as you're burned out on that, then you're going to go to your rotation. I like to incorporate striking, you know, so it can be elbow strikes. It could be just hooks on a heavy bag. It can be, you know, it can be kicks. It can be whatever you want to make it, any different kinds of strikes. Cause if you're striking properly, you're using your core to generate the power. Therefore you're working your core. And then as soon as you're done with that, do it until you're gassed on that particular exercise. Then you go do your sprint. Your sprint can be, you know, whatever you make it for the day. It can be 100 yards. It can be a quarter mile. And then you do that 5 times. And so you're basically keeping the weight somewhat moderate throughout, but you're going max reps every time. And 5 rounds later, you'll be hurting, but you will get results. Like, you know what I mean? And it goes fast, you know? So then the next day you change it up. Your push could be, you know, it could be anything. It could be dumbbell presses, you know, so you're just doing your shoulders and you're working them, or it's military press, you know, for the push. Your pull could be deadlifts. Your rotation exercise, if you'd done, let's say, hooks on a hanging heavy bag, take that heavy bag, put it on the ground, and do elbow strikes, and then go do your sprint. And then you just change it up. But you're always doing a push, you're always doing a pull, you're always doing a rotation, and you're always doing a sprint. And now you're ready to, and the goal at the end of the day is if I'm what you're, you know, you're in city X halfway around the world and you come across this bad guy and, or a bunch of bad guys, let's say, was the reason for run, fight, run is you want to have the lungs and the heart to be able to kick somebody's ass, do a full bore sprint, and still have the energy to kick someone else's ass at the end. That's the goal of the workout is not to just fight someone and be throwing up over in the corner when you get done. Yeah. You want to still have the energy to continue on. And that's the goal of the workout.
That's awesome. And that's extremely functional. And like I said, I know Scott Whitner and a lot of you guys know, editor of the Loadout Room, is like genuinely a huge fan of it. So that's cool, man. And I know he's seen some results from it.
Well, good. Yeah, I know he posted some pictures. I think I reposted.
Oh, yeah. If I have to see Scott Whitner's abs one more time. No, I think it's awesome that he's doing that. I'm just breaking balls. A great dude. But, yeah, no, that was – and he just genuinely in a private conversation mentioned it to me and reads all your stuff. So
good. That makes at least one person reading it. That's good.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, I really hope a lot of you guys listening pick up the 100 Deadly Skills Puzzle and Activity book. Skimming through it, I even feel like for, you know, like the younger adult, I think would be into it too, don't you think?
Yeah, it's really built for everyone. You know, it's got so much variety of stuff in it that if you're a Sudoku person or if you're, you know, a crossword person, it still has those basic puzzles in it, but it has a little bit more just to tap into the parts of the brain as we discussed earlier. So yeah, it's from kids all the way to, you know, the old guy sitting in a nursing home.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, there's the 2019 Deadly Skills Desk Calendar. And it's funny, I'm looking at the print that we have here, the 100 Deadly Skills print. So I know it's like that type of thing where you have a new deadly skill. I remember when Jim West came in here, he saw this print and he loved it. This is totally Jim West style. The one like, you know, number 29, turn a pen into a weapon. And this is probably something I'm just looking at it now. The guy stabbing, you know, the attacker
dude in the neck.
In the neck with a pen. I have a feeling Jim West has done that on many occasions. And I know that you could buy on the site too your pen that's, you know, that's basically a weapon.
Yes. Yeah. So Violent Nomad has kind of like the shortcut, right? I mean, I started pushing the, you know, steel barrel pens a long time ago just because it's a great improvised weapon if you can't carry guns or whatever the deal is. But
And you could probably bring it on a plane and that type of thing, I would think, right? I mean, I don't think people would notice.
Yeah, the discreet. What I have on my site is the discreet stabbing tool, which has a tungsten point. And tungsten is something I grew to admire with explosives. And you know, if you put tungsten cubes into like a soap discharge, it will shred whoever's on the receiving end. I mean, it is, tungsten is a badass metal.
Yeah, there's tungsten penetrators in the 5.56 green tip we use.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's used in a lot of different stuff. When you use it, especially in this tool, it'll punch through just about anything, So if you don't have the strength, it'll still do damage is kind of the point. So if a female is using it, then it'll still, hurt the recipient.
So, the website is clintemerson.com, which links you to all that. It links you to Escape the Wolf, Violent Nomad, at 100 Deadly Skills on Instagram and Twitter. And this is great, man. It's been a while since we've had you on. So I always like having you on, of course, and hopefully you'll be back in New York at some point and come in studio. I think that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'm actually up there December 7th. It's a quick trip, but yeah, next time I'm up there, maybe for the next book, who knows? Turn it into the Pentagon. That's going to take forever. But
if you're here December 7th, are you coming to the Hurricane Group party?
I didn't even know there was one. I'm there for
crosses over with it. So,
oh, all right. Well, maybe we'll stop by.
All right.
I'm there with filming with Wired Magazine all day long. So I don't know what their schedule looks like, but
I will text Brandon right now and tell him you're in town. I am pretty damn sure you've got the invite.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Sweet.
Yeah, I'll be up there. So yeah, and we'll I'm sure when the next book comes out, you guys will get hit up as part of the radio tour and all that stuff they set
nice,
up. So
perfect.
Right on. Okay.
Seems like every author stops with you guys, right? It's kind of become a trend these days.
Yeah, quite a few of them. We're a hot item now.
Yeah, the only person who I thought was coming on and going to be in studio and then ended up bailing was General McChrystal.
But
for the most part, everybody
McChrystal
seems to be coming
off.
In. Yeah, I felt very blown off. It was like weeks after week of we got the book. Oh, I'm coming in, and then it was I'm sure he did Fox News and all that stuff. And he's like, some shitty little podcast. Not going to do it.
No, but we appreciate you taking the time to come on with us for, 45 minutes or an hour today, Clint. And when your book comes out, be happy to have you back on.
Awesome.
Or before, whenever you want, really.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. And, I'm sure we'll be seeing each other out there.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Thanks for doing this.
Yep, thank you. Take care, guys.
Talk to you soon, bro.
All right, bye.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Soft Rep Radio.